Hello everyone and welcome to the latest installment of Baldur's Blatherings, the podcast where Mary and I shine a light on the curious, the shadowy and often very magical history of the Scottish borderlands. Mary, yesterday when I was working, are you well?
I am, thank you.
Good.
Are you?
Good. Yes, I've recovered from a little bit of illness and I hope I can keep the coughing to a minimum today. Yesterday something interesting happened, and maybe this will excite you about a topic we can talk about today.
Okay.
I was working with a group of students. I say students, these are business people at Volkswagen in Germany. And we had an hour of open discussion. They get the chance to practice their discussion tactics, their negotiating techniques, etc., etc. And to do that, I'd written up five or six well-known sayings. You know, the sort of thing, travel broadens the mind.
Okay,
everybody
yeah.
goes, yeah, true, move on. And one of those was this: failure is not the opposite of success. It is very much part of success.
Okay.
And it became a very interesting discussion. Because, you know, in Germany, they have a single word, Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Which we use because it would take probably 19 English words to explain what the Germans do in one very efficiently. And I asked them about stories they may have been told when they were younger. They had a bit of morality or that taught lessons. And I mentioned the story of Robert the Bruce in the cave with the spider, failing to weave its web, and then on the seventh attempt, being successful.
Yes.
And one of them piped up with a great question. Yes, Doug, but is that a myth or a legend?
Okay.
Which was a great question, I thought.
That's a brilliant question.
So I went down the line of, well, Robert the Bruce, historical figure, did exist. It's perhaps an exaggerated story, in a sense. But it got me thinking about previous podcasts you and I have done together. Things like the two Tams.
Yes.
Tamlin, Thomas the Rhymer.
Yeah,
where we
yeah.
have a bit of historical fact. We, in some of those cases, we have a real person who existed.
Yeah.
But we often move into the territory of myth.
Of myth and legend.
Or legend.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought we might have a wee chat about that today.
Now that's really interesting because the last podcast that has just gone out is the second part of our Standing Stones podcast.
The Stone Circles, yeah.
Where we talk about the myths and the legends around the Hairstone Rig and Standing Stones. And lots of people have been commenting on that and saying, oh, I want you to do more of these and we like the myths and the legends.
More
and,
of that?
Yes, more of that.
Oh, but Mary, we're a history podcast.
Well, yes, that's the thing. I've had some people say, why are you doing myths and legends when you're a history podcast? So it goes both ways, but also somebody who said, oh, well, you could do lots and lots of these and lots of ghost stories. And I thought, oh, we're into ghost stories now. These definitions are getting stretched in all sorts of different directions. It is difficult to pull apart. If you start picking apart myths and legends and history, you don't get very far. Because if you think of the first episode we did on Standing Stones, which was the archaeological or historical one, if you like.
Yes.
We spent our whole time saying, we don't know. We don't know. We're not sure. Perhaps, maybe, sort of, So that was great. And then when we did the second one with the stories, we knew exactly what we were saying. So it's interesting that we knew the myths and legends, but we didn't know the history.
So we shifted in a sense, to symbolism, and you know, the symbolism of the hair and things like that.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And if you look at all sorts of historical figures, one of the classic ones is Charlemagne. Now, Charlemagne is alleged to have been crowned by the Pope, either in Rome or Jerusalem, depending on which version you read, on Christmas Day in the year 800. Well, he wasn't, because he was in Aachen at the time. But his spin doctor said it, because it said that, well, if the Pope has crowned him, and if the Pope has crowned him either in Rome, you know, the founding of the church, or in Jerusalem, then God has smiled on him, and he is the legitimate Holy Roman Emperor. It was an absolute bit of PR spin that Charlemagne did.
Yeah.
But that is the myth and the legend that has come down about Charlemagne. Now, whether or not the shall we say, PR people of today for politicians. Whether or not their myths and legends are going to be remembered in 400 or 500 years, I don't know. But that's the thing. What is history? What is a myth? What is a legend? Where are the eternal truths within that? Because so many historical figures, especially the great man history, it's written by the great men themselves or the PR guys.
Yeah.
So we don't know. We don't know what exactly happened and what's the myth and what's the legend.
So if I understand what you're saying, Charlemagne is a good example. So many of what I would consider to be myths have their roots in religious belief systems often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And are supporting a particular religious concept.
Yes.
Charlemagne being a good example.
I think the slight difference between a myth and a legend, and these are very slippery terms, legends tend to be stories around an individual, and the individual is either a real person or an amalgamation of a real person.
Yeah.
So you get Arthurian legends.
Yeah, that's a good
Arthur
example.
Was probably an amalgam of several, you know, kings at the time, or the legend of Robert the Bruce. Myths tend to be more... less focused on one individual, but to me are more likely to contain eternal truths.
Mm.
So we had the myth of Geordie and Janet going down, you know, into fairyland, which was very like the myth of Eurydice in going into hell and Orpheus and all that. So these they contain eternal truths, although they are wrapped in a story, whereas a legend may not contain eternal truths, but it's wrapped around a real individual. But legend, you can see sort of like myth is at one end of the spectrum and history is at the other, but when you start picking them apart, they're not that far away, and legend maybe sits in the middle.
And maybe Robin Hood throws a fly in that ointment, because that maybe Robin Hood, you know, maybe an amalgam in a sense.
But again, that the eternal truth of you know, the redistribution of wealth and power and use of authority and authoritarianism, and the common people rising up. Because you'll notice in a lot of things in folklore, in most cases, authorities are held to account. They don't have a happy ending.
That's
because,
a good point.
You know, ordinary people will say this is not right or that is not right.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about fairy tales where, you know, the prince and the princess marry and live happily ever after.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They're shading more into fairy tales, but they do come from myths because, again, it's keeping you safe. It's teaching you things. It's teaching how you should live your life.
Now, you mentioned fairy tales, and that's interesting because I'm not really in the business of pointing fingers at other people. I leave that to certain other groups. But how susceptible to propagandization is, because fairy tales are, Hollywood, I would argue, has taken a lot of original fairy tales and completely changed the narrative to create an aura of everything, you know, ends happily.
Yeah.
Are myths and legends, which are narratives passed down, are they subject to the same susceptibility to being used as power plays, in a sense?
They can be, but they're slightly different in that if you look at Hollywood, if you look at the Grimm fairy tales, the tales that were written down by the Brothers Grimm were not the actual tales, because the people who were telling them, so it's ordinary people who have these folk tales, and these two posh, educated men turn up and say, tell us your folk tales. So they would edit those folk tales to think, well, that's what the guy from the city wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So already the story has been altered. Then the Grimm brothers write them down and probably tidied them up because that's what they wanted the story to say. And then the editor might have had a hand in it as well. So by the time Hollywood's got its hands on it, it's probably very, very different from what it was.
Indeed,
And a lot of the fairy stories and the fairy tales that came out of Hollywood from about the 1950s onwards, there's a huge big connection to the Holocaust, because during the Nazi Germany period, a lot of Jewish filmmakers, producers, directors and writers left, sensibly, went to America.
And arguably started Hollywood as
exactly.
they are today.
Exactly, so what they wanted, they wanted a happy ever after, which they themselves had not had, because their families had been murdered and treated abysmally. So in their storytelling, there was always a happy ever after. That's why in the 1950s American sitcoms and television and films, there's always dad at the head of the household and mum, and, you know, there's little Timmy and little Janie, and there's the dog, and there's a white picket fence. So every time a fairy tale is told, you put the ending on that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with myths and legends, because they are much more in the control of ordinary people, then they are much, much harder, actually.
Yeah.
There are seldom happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
There are ambivalent endings in myths and legends. And it's the sort of thing where it's often, they're often confusing, because you yourself as the listener have to put your input in to a myth and a legend. So that's why it's interesting, because there are these myths and legends about Scotland. I mean, if you speak to somebody about Scotland who doesn't know Scotland, they'll talk about probably porridge and haggis and the mists and the weather.
Yeah.
But then they'll start talking about Rob Roy. They'll talk about Robert the Bruce and the spider. You know, they will talk about these things. They're not actually talking about the history of Scotland. They won't talk about the Stuart dynasty, which was a disaster for the country. You know, they won't actually talk about John Knox, but they'll talk about Mary Queen of Scots.
Good point. Yeah.
And the myths and the legends around her, rather than the young French educated woman who was trying to, you know, steer her way through Scottish politics.
I think that's a fair point. A visit to any bookshop in tourist Edinburgh will show you that the preponderance of books being sold to tourists are about Scottish myths and legends
rather than
the pure history in a sense.
Partly because pure history is, in my opinion, history is an odd subject. I mean, it's not a subject like science where you have to have lots of training to do it in a way. You don't need equipment, you don't need like chemicals and things. But if you don't teach somebody how to do history properly, if you don't do the source analysis and the critical thinking in history, it can be either incredibly deadly dull.
Yes.
Or very easily you fall into the myths and legends pocket. So I think that's why people are not really very fond of history, because it doesn't make sense. Because you'll get people like me who'll say things like, that's not true, where's the source analysis to prove it? And then in the next breath, I'll tell you the story of Tamlin, which confuses people. You know, and I'm comfortable in doing that. I'm perfectly comfortable in talking about what is a myth, what is a legend, and what's history. Because you can pull those apart. And I'm not saying that you can't trust anything and there is no such thing as facts. There are facts. And facts are part of history. But so is story. As I keep saying, story is not history for a reason. A
legend, story. Yes. As someone who is big on source analysis and so on, does that mean then? I mentioned at the start that when I was asked, is that a myth or a legend?
Mm-hmm. You know,
is that true or is it a lie? Binary. Yeah. One of the things I tried to point out, I may be wrong, was that a legend in a sense is a passed down narrative. And it's handed down generation to generation, and perhaps that gives it a sense of purity that a fairy tale does not have, which you've suggested can be shaped in any way you like. Just wondering out loud, we've been making this podcast now for a while, and I think in that time we have stuck our toes into the water of myth and legend very much.
Yes.
You mentioned at the start when we did the hair stains, the stone circles.
Yes.
You got a lot of positive feedback on that. What's your general reaction to that, where myth and legend meets? I think we've distinguished between a myth and a legend a little bit, but where it meets historical fact. And can you think of any previous podcasts that we have done that have been a bit of a hybrid of both?
Think of Thomas the Rhymer, he was a real person. Yeah. He was Sir Thomas of Ercildoune.
Yeah.
And yet there are these legends of him going to Fairyland.
Fairies.
You know, if you think about the podcast we did on Robert Burns, where we have the legend that he wrote the Selkirk Grace.
Yes.
Well, he didn't.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so this is the thing, that what is true and what is not, what is real and what is not, what happened and what didn't. And in some cases, does it actually matter? Does it actually matter? We have the myth of Michael Scott, the wizard, splitting the Eildons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could say that that's a story about a wizard who was a real person.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know he was in the court of all sorts of people, and he was a necromancer, and he was an alchemist. He was a real, genuine person.
Mm-hmm.
And the legend is that he split the Eildons. But that's not the point of that legend. The point of that legend is about power. It's about him battling a demon. It's about demonstrating that you have power and that you can stand up to evil things when they come your way.
Yeah.
That's what that story is about. People miss the point of legends, because what they'll do is they'll hear the story, or they'll read the story or the myth. They'll read the legend or the myth at the top level, and they don't think about the meaning behind it. And it's the meaning that is important, and it's the meaning that is true. It is true that if you stand up to evil, you can overcome it. Yes, it's scary, because the demon was scary. Yes, it's frightening, and yes, he's powerful. But if you stand up for what is right, you can overpower evil. That's true. The fact that it's wrapped up in a myth, it's neither here nor there. And that's the bit I think people miss.
Mm.
So they'll say things to me like, why don't you do pure history? And I'll say, well, what do you mean by pure history? Because you can take half a dozen stories that you have learned from history, from your history lessons in school, and you can pick them apart and find out that half of them are not quite as true as you thought they were. And it upsets people when they find that out. We have a particular one in Scotland with King Billy and the Battle of the Boyne.
The Battle of the Boyne.
Now, I was brought up in Glasgow, so I am used to the west coast of Scotland, where we have certain prejudices, and people will go on and on about the Battle of the Boyne, where the Protestants beat the Catholics. And I never tired of telling people that King Billy had as many Catholics as Protestants in his army. But people don't want to hear that. That's true, but they don't want that. They want the legend. They want the historical legend of King Billy's Protestants beating the Catholics.
You know, I'm glad we don't script these, because you've just preempted what was going to be my next question here. So what value then do myths and legends have for us as an ongoing narrative? And I think you've just explained that.
They challenge us to think about our actions and our intentions.
Yeah.
Remember, again, we talked about Nine Stains Ring, and the fact that if you walked across it and you were bad, your feet would burn.
Your feet would burn, yeah.
And you talked about the fairies helping you find out who was and wasn't a good guy, and that's true, but it was, what were the intentions of the fairies?
Mm.
And what do you mean by a good guy? What do you mean by a bad guy? And why don't you trust? Or do you need proof of trust? And these are all eternal truths. These are all parts of the human condition. That something like, you know, the Battle of Boyne took place in 1690, or the Battle of Bannockburn took place in 1314. Those dates don't teach you anything. They're pegs on
you
which
you
can hang things. But you know what I mean? Knowing that the Battle of Bannockburn...
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
What took place in 1314? What does that tell me? That's a meaningless fact to me. You know, it's over 1,000 years ago. So what?
I mentioned in one of the more recent podcasts we did, something I'm hearing more and more is, I heard, and I have to paraphrase, I heard Prime Minister Sunak say quite recently that it would be wrong of us to revisit our history in the UK. And I heard only yesterday, I think, someone basically say we should never fail to be proud of being British just because the Germans screwed up twice. And I thought, as a historian, that bothers me. Mm-hmm. That somehow retrospectively Germany gets the finger pointed at it for the Great War.
Yeah.
How do you react to that as a historian?
Yeah, it really rankles with me. Every person should be looking at their own history, their own personal history, their community history, their national history. Because the problem with history and nationalism, that's a very bad combination. If you allow the elites, because that's the thing, if you don't examine your history, you allow the elites to control your history. And the elites will use history to push you in certain ways. I mean, propaganda isn't Britain great? And Queen Elizabeth was fantastic.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. And you know what? We abolished slavery, don't you know?
Yeah, which is we were part of the abolition of slavery, and we should be proud of that. But we were also incredibly heavily involved. So you can't pick and choose. This is it. If you're going to do that, if you're going to look at the nice bits, you have to look at the nasty bits.
Indeed.
You know, I mean, the Scots are renowned for being friendly and welcoming and great. And we murdered more women in England during the witchcraft trials of the 17th century.
Yeah.
We can't have it both ways.
Indeed.
You have to look at all of it. And the more we look and the more we learn and the more we think about the intentions of the individual, why did we do that? Why didn't we do that? Why did we go there? Why did we not stay here? That's much more. Why is the interesting question in history?
Yeah.
Why did we do that? John Muir, who came from Dunbar, relatively close to where we are now, is revered as the man that set up the national parks in America.
Yes.
And
yes,
he's supposed to be great. And there's a park, a very large park up near Dunbar, with his name on it. And he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Well, was he? Because he goes across to America, takes one look at it and says, oh, this wilderness is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Then he notices some Native Americans and turns around and says, could they be removed, please? Mm-hmm. I want them out of here.
Yeah.
So you can't have him being Mr. Nice Guy and setting up national parks without recognising that he was a horrific racist at the same time.
Yeah.
We have to do that. And it's not a case of bashing people today for what their ancestors did. It's understanding what our ancestors did and learning from it and hopefully not repeating it in the future. And that's what myths and legends, that's why they last, because they're teaching us eternal truths. They're teaching us how to be better individuals.
And may well act as a very significant deterrent, not only the passing down of stories and narratives and so on, is they may act, I feel, as a bit of a deterrent to the increasingly binary world that we live in.
Yes, myths and legends are always shades of grey. And you can get different meanings from myths and legends depending on what you're looking for yourself. You could take the myth of Janet and Geordie falling into fairyland and saying, well, they shouldn't have been kissing and cuddling because their parents told them not to. They disobeyed their parents, therefore something bad happened. Or you could take that as, isn't it awful that the parents weren't being nice to them and they would not have had that horrific experience if their parents had been nicer to them? You can take it both ways.
Or you could say, when a door opens, go through.
Exactly.
As I once saw at a Yoko Ono exhibition, just climb, and at the top it just said, yes.
Yes. And that's where myth and legend and history blend together.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you look at somebody like Caesar Augustus, Caesar Augustus was the greatest Caesar. Well, he was the first Caesar, and he said he was the greatest Caesar, and he decided that he was going to have huge monoliths erected at the edge of the Roman Empire, right the way across the Roman Empire. And you can find these things all over Europe to this day and the Middle East. And on it, he wrote about his exploits and how fandabidozy and wonderful he was.
Yeah.
And the half of what's on there is wrong. Now, I know we can all massage our CVs a little bit, and that's fine. But if you're a little Briton living in England, or you're a Germanic tribe, or you're in Persia, or you're in the Levant somewhere, and you read it, you think that's true.
Yeah.
It's not, but it's the myth and legend that he created about himself whilst he was alive. And it's a historical fact that he did that. See, this is the thing. It's a historical fact that he made things up. It's a historical fact that he created a myth and legend about himself.
Yeah.
We're going to end up being very metaphysical here and disappearing into ourselves there. But
Before I move on, because I've got an idea floating around in my head that I'll throw at you from left field. But before that, I spend a lot of my time working with students who are business people in the German world of industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really spend a lot of time on, but many of them do listen to our podcast.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, you had the comment from one of my students, is Mary a real Scottish woman?
I'm fascinated to know what nationality that person thought I was.
She's not talking like I expected. But you spend a bit of your time at the local primary school.
I do, yes.
You have done a really good job, in my opinion, over this little chat of explaining the pure value of myths and legends to our overall historical narrative.
Yes.
Does the local school and does the education system in general do a good enough job of ensuring that these myths and legends and narratives continue?
That's a difficult question. I think the local school does. Whether or not the education system does within the curriculum, I'm not sure.
Mm.
But we do have the Scottish Storytelling Centre
up
in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And they do a huge amount of work.
Absolutely.
They have storytellers that work all the way through the year. And there are storytellers right the way across the country that are telling people the folklore of Scotland. And what's interesting about that is, and I've sat in with a few sessions, is, you know, the storyteller will tell a tale and I'll know the tale and I'll be sitting there quite nicely. And then the storyteller will come to the end and ask if the children have any questions. And the children ask questions I would never have thought of. They will pick up on something completely different. They are getting something else from that story. And it sparks their imagination. And that's a huge value of that. So that they will, again, the Geordie and Janet story. I know one youngster that said something like, oh, why was the fairy queen so mean and stuck them with the pin? You see? And she said, well, that just shows you shouldn't trust people you don't know.
Mm.
And that's what she took from that. Mm-hmm. So in a way, that was a good story because it was teaching her, you know, be careful of people that you're not sure of. Do not be too trusting.
Yeah.
And they will often find something completely ridiculous. I had one little boy sort of snort at me at that story, that they couldn't have fallen to fairyland. There's no such place.
No such thing, yeah.
You see? And I said, oh, right. And he said, yes, the fairies don't live in one particular place. He wasn't saying there weren't fairies. He was just saying that there wasn't a fairyland down a rabbit burrow.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Which, again, it was a case of...
It's more amorphous than that, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's the thing with storytelling with the youngsters. They pick up on different things. And it does mean different things to different people in different ways.
Uh-huh.
And if you're speaking to children from... I've spoken to children who are not Scottish-born... And they take very different things from those stories as well.
Yeah. So I'm thinking the American dream, myth or legend.
Well, exactly, yes. Because if you look at that, that is the dream that you are sold. Anybody in America can be anything. I mean, I don't think you have to be born there to be the president. But you can go over there and you can become as rich as you want. It's the thing where I think it's in their constitution that they have the right to the pursuit of happiness.
Yes.
Which is often changed by some people to the right to happiness, which is a different thing. So the legend has grown up that you have got the right to be happy all the time, and you have got the right to be rich, and you've got the right to all of the wealth that you want. Well, those of us coming from a European perspective, we know what happens when you get rich too quickly or you get rich for no good reason. It never ends well.
The pursuit. How?
Mm-hmm.
how very comfortable for people to omit the pursuit.
The pursuit, yes.
I started this little chat with a rather long introduction talking about a group I was working with yesterday, and we had that success and failure. Pardon me. Another thing we were talking about was a quotation, a quote from Pablo Picasso, who in his day said something like, computers are useless because all they do is provide answers. And I was asking them what they thought he meant by that. And we got into a conversation about AI, and people are telling me, oh yeah, you can now listen to Freddie Mercury singing Michael Jackson songs and so on and so forth. And I mentioned, apropos the Picasso quote, that ChatGPT had been used to write a song lyrics in the style of Nick Cave. Now, someone I'm particularly fond of as a musician. And his response was, this is bull, because the system that wrote this hasn't gone through the pain, the journey, in a sense, the pursuit that I go through.
Yes, the
to
emotion.
Grasp those lyrics, the emotion of
the
thing.
Emotion. There's no authenticity behind that. I mean, yes, you can get a computer to do all sorts of fancy-schmancy things. But if there is no emotion, I always think it's interesting when I have a friend who particularly likes blues singers, and I find it interesting when you hear somebody in their 20s singing a blues song about love and loss, and then you hear somebody in their 60s singing exactly the same song.
You got it.
A world
You've
of
got
difference.
It in one.
Because they've had the 40 years. They've pursued. They've been heartbroken and all these sorts of things. So yes, and again, taking us back to myths and legends, there is that authenticity. And that's why I think they have survived and they continue to survive. It's because they are authentic. Because the emotion is true in whatever has happened to the individual, or the raw emotion that they are talking about, the intentions of the person, what the actual core beliefs of that person are writ large in myth and legend, whereas they're not in history, because you're writing, you're writing something completely different. You're writing what you want people to know about you.
Yes, yes.
Because history books, you know, it's an old trope, but they are written by the victors.
Yeah.
So we don't want the messy truth about the beginning of the First World War. We don't want that. You know, we'll go with the legend, Germany started it. And that's a nice, convenient, tidy, we've got that, we can put a ribbon on it, there you go, sorted.
Yeah.
And that's the legend that has grown up, because that is much more comforting than looking at what Britain was actually doing. Yeah. At the start of the 20th century, and what all the other countries in Europe were doing, France and Russia were up to with their train lines and their development, and Germany feeling encircled, and all these different things. I'm not saying Germany was blameless, but no European country was blameless.
No,
that's the problem. Is that's messy, and that's why we need to learn our history.
Yeah.
Because if we don't learn our history, then we can't unpack the legends.
I can't know the answer to this, but you talk about your, and I agree totally with you. If I take France, for example, at that point in time, France is kind of looking over there to the east, and it sees Germany with a booming birth rate, with advances in technology that are way ahead of what France has. I think those in power are kind of going, well, if not now, better when, and better now than later.
Yes.
So you've nailed that perfectly for me, Mary. But here's my little curveball out of left field.
Okay.
You're the historian, I'm not. Sonny Bean. This is something which really gets to me. Myth, legend, propaganda.
Where to begin?
And I would urge anyone who is not aware of the story of Sonny Bean to do a bit of research on this one.
Sonny Bean was a Scottish cannibal.
Apparently,
allegedly. The trouble is, the legend of Sonny Bean is exactly the same as the legend of Cave Jack, who was a Welsh cannibal.
Ah, right.
Round about the same time.
Uh-huh.
Now, there were people who lived in caves in East Lothian because they couldn't afford to live elsewhere.
Uh-huh.
There were people who would rob drunken farmers on their way home from market.
Indeed.
Probably still happens to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people who would, kill these farmers and drag them off and hide the bodies somewhere. Did they eat them? Maybe. I suppose somebody somewhere along the line might have been a cannibal. But it's awfully convenient that Sonny being the Scottish cannibal and Cave Jack the cannibal down in Wales, these are, because they are so gruesome and they are so over the top, that to me is when it always smacks of propaganda.
Uh-huh. You haven't mentioned the English equivalent.
There isn't one.
Ah, there you have it.
You see, there isn't one. And that's always the thing. If you think of a story like Sonny Bean, we look at the story of Sonny Bean and we go, oh, that's unbelievable. Come on.
Yeah.
And the minute you do that, I think you can tell it's propaganda to bring in Brexit, which is your favourite topic for a change. When we had the campaign about leaving the European Union, there was a big red bus with a big fat number on it. I think it was 360 million that we were going to spend giving to the NHS every single week the second we left the European Union. And some of us at the time, but almost everybody now, looks at that and says, that's unbelievable. And that becomes propaganda. If I tell you the story of Janet and Geordie falling down into fairyland, your reaction is not, that's unbelievable, because you know it is a story I'm telling you.
Uh-huh.
And that's the difference. When you have that, I think people's instincts are very good. And if your instinct is instantly, that's unbelievable, that's the propaganda.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if the propaganda is perpetrated by the elite, they have got all of the media and press means at their fingertips to continue to tell you this propaganda. But I do think that's the difference. The fact that there isn't an English one. I'm sure there was one in Ireland as well.
There must have been.
I'm sure, because I know that certainly in the late, around about 1895, there was a case of a man who'd murdered his wife in Ireland. And he had thought she might have been a changeling or a fairy or a witch, and he burned her in the hope that she would come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all very tragic, and he was put on trial with some family members. The point was that the British press, led by the English press, picked up on that and said, see how silly the Irish are, they still believe in fairies and witches. And the Home Rule Bill fell because of the propaganda that was used. So they used the historical fact of the fact this man had murdered his wife as then a propaganda tool.
Uh-huh.
But then it became a legend of, are you a witch or are you a fairy or are you the wife of Michael Clary? So these things can morph from one maybe thing to another very easily.
So maybe we can end this episode of our podcast with you correcting me. Often, when doing group sessions with people, I will hear, it's a well-known fact that the Scots and the Irish are great travellers.
Yes.
And my response to that is often, that's a myth.
Yes, yes.
These were historical and cultural reasons that Scots and Irish people shifted.
Sentences that begin with, it's a well-known fact.
It's a well-known fact.
Usually turn out to be incorrect, in my opinion. You can go onto the internet and get well-known facts about all sorts of exciting things.
You sure can.
The vast majority of which, I am sure, are made up.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if we've quite answered the difference between a myth, a legend and history, but they are all entangled.
They're interwoven.
I think it's interesting, and I think it's something that people should listen to myths, listen to legends,
indeed,
read some history, and sort it out for yourself.
Yeah.
And don't just listen to the top story. Think about the intentions. Think about what the actual truth is that you're being told.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not Robert the Bruce ever sat in a cave with a spider doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It was about tenacity. It was about continuing on.
Yeah.
It was about having a cause that you believed was right, and you just keep on going until eventually you will win.
Failure is an integral part of eventual success.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. I think it matters not. We've had a very good chat about the real importance of myths and legends in the rich tapestry of Scottish history.
Good.
It's interwoven, as you said,
it
into
is,
the rich
yes,
tapestry
yes.
of Scottish history.
Yes.
And that's a cliche.
And that is why within border blitherings, you never know if you get history, myth, legend, or all three in one podcast.
Yeah, but they're all three. Okay, Mary, thank you very much. Great. Coffee time.
Absolutely. Bye for now.
And that is a cliche.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.